Good evening, everybody. It's 8 p.m. Let's have an AA meeting. My name's Tim, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tim.
Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story.
My name's Robert. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Robert.
This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut ideas of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeaker.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. And so I get to introduce our speaker. I've known John really since essentially he came to Atlanta. And, you know, I could tell you so many stories about him. But the fact that he gets to speak after me, I think I'm not going to do that. But I will comment on a couple of things. Over the last couple of years, I've been there to have him experience the birth of a child and the joy that brings, and also deal with the family difficulties, the death of a parent, things like that. And with all these things, he's done it with style and with grace. And I'm going to let him tell his story. So, John, come on up.
All right. Thanks, Robert. My name's John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
And I've got at least 1 year of sobriety, and I'm going to tell his or her story. All right. Actually, my sobriety date is October 5th, 2009, so that means that this year, we're just talking about it. It's kind of hard to believe I actually just reached 10 years. It's insane. When I first came in, 30 days was just unbelievable. You know, just thinking I could get something like that was just, you know, unfathomable. I've never gone that long since I started drinking, not drinking. But just to kind of start from where it all began, I grew up in Columbus, Georgia, so, you know, it's a couple hours south of here. And if you're familiar with Columbus or unfamiliar, there's just not much to do down there. It's just a small town, and it's pretty boring. And, it's fairly transient. There's a military base down there, so, you know, a lot of people came and went. I didn't grow up in the military family, but that's just kind of how it is down there. You hear a lot of people say on their stories, and it's true with mine too, I just never felt like I belonged. You know, there's something wrong with this town, something wrong with my family, something wrong with my friends. Obviously it was never me. You know, there's something wrong with all these people, the places and the things. I just never felt like I was, you know, dropped in the right location in the world at the right time or whatever. I just did not belong. And, I spent most of my childhood just miserable. You know, it's a general theme that I hear a lot from just other people when they speak and just, from talking to sponsors and things is, I was just desperately wanted people to like me, but I did not want to be like them, if that makes any sense. I didn't like the people I were around, but I still wanted them to like me. And I grew up my whole life by that, you know, especially with my parents. I didn't feel like I belonged in this family. You know, they were just totally different than I was. But, I still desperately wanted them to, approve of everything I did. And, I was constantly changing groups of friends, wanting to be with this group and then changing to everything about me so I'd be in this group. You know, I was a chameleon. Like I said, my skin just never fit. And, just kind of, made it through, school, growing up, everything like that. Just a small group of friends. And, never really drank, though. I mean, my grandmother, she always said that there were alcoholics in our family. Alcoholism runs in our family. And, that people-pleasing self of mine, I was like, I'd do what she says because I want her to be happy with me, And I never really messed with alcohol because, we just heard it so much that there was alcoholism in the family. I didn't experience it directly. My mom and dad, they never really drank at all. They'd have, you'd see drink like a glass of wine every once in a while. And actually, it's kind of funny. My mom and dad, I guess, but my mom mainly, she liked her glass of wine like after we went to bed, and she always hid it in the bathroom cabinet, like underneath the bathroom cabinet, underneath the sink. And I was over there helping her clean out the house. I'll get to this later about cleaning out the house. And sure enough, when we were going through the bathroom, there was this box of wine underneath the sink. It's still there. And, you know, she's not an alcoholic, so that box of wine probably lasted a year. For me, that box of wine, you know, that's like a day. A neighbor used to say, she drank as much as we did. When I say we, I'll get to that later, too, about my wife. But she drank as much as we did. And she always called the regular bottle of wine that she got, the little bottle, and the big Magnum bottles was a normal bottle for her. So she'd drink a bottle a night, but when she said bottle, it was big bottle. That's kind of my thinking. So, we actually later on in life, when we ran away to Florida, we actually joined this winemaking club, and we had, like, gallons and gallons of wine in the garage, and needless to say, it didn't last very long. But anyway, like I said, I didn't drink much, drink at all, really, other than just like a sip or two of my dad's beer when he was with his friends, until really college. I was kind of a late bloomer there. But I did experiment with outside issues. Drugs were a little bit of my story. My first experience with something that was that changed the way I thought about things was when I got my first job. Worked at a grocery store, and one of my coworkers who was bagging groceries with me was the neighborhood drug dealer, and he exposed me to my first, experience with drugs. So, I would go behind the store, would smoke weed, and then go back to work, and that was the first, that just hit me like a Mack truck, you know. It was just like, oh my God, this is what I've been missing. It just changed the way I saw the world. I was comfortable with everything. I felt good. I had an immediate bond with my coworker. It was like we're getting away with something, and we're kind of immediate friends over this. These drugs we're doing, and I started doing that constantly. That was my drug of choice then, because for me, being the not liking anybody sort of guy, the to-myself kind of guy and just judgmental kind of guy growing up, you all suck and I know what's right. I didn't get invited to very many parties. So, alcohol was kind of, at least in high school, alcohol and parties kind of went together. But the drug scene is kind of where I ended up there. So, I'm sure my parents smelled it on me quite a bit coming home, and they never said anything. We were kind of the family where nothing's ever wrong. We don't talk about anything. Everybody else is wrong. And they would just sweep all these issues under the rug. So that kind of haunted me for a long time where, especially with when I tried to get sober of, everything's okay. I've got it. Other people are probably worse off because my uncle grew up. Well, growing up, my uncle, he was what I thought of as an alcoholic. My aunt, she remarried and married literally the town drunk. I mean, he was the guy that actually bought alcohol for my cousins in high school because they couldn't get in because he was always passed out in front of the liquor store. That's who she ended up marrying. And I've only seen him like a few times because the rest of the time he's been in jail. So when I thought of alcoholism, I thought of my uncle that my aunt remarried, the extreme case. Like when my grandfather died later on in life, he was never around. He was always at the bar drinking, and we had to go find Uncle Alan, drag him back in, and that's what I thought of. So we always swept issues under the rug, and I always thought somebody else has it worse. And like I said earlier, my drinking really took off in college. That was the first time where I was around people that I thought that I kind of more fit with. People came from college from all over the country, all over the world, actually. And I kind of saw what life was like outside of Columbus, Georgia. It was different. It was more worldly. And, I kind of fit with these people a lot more in college than I did growing up. And I immediately got stuck into the fraternity scene. And alcohol is obviously big in there, and I had easy access to alcohol then, and that instantly became my drug of choice. Basically the weed was in the back seat and the alcohol was in the front seat, and I drank as much as I could anytime I could. I would skip class to go drink with friends. I'd definitely keep my fridge in my room stocked up. I started drinking when I was driving around. I went to a friend's house in the fraternity, and we were studying. We thought we were studying. We ended up drinking all night, just hanging out, and ended up driving home drunk and wrecked my truck, and then had to make up some excuse to my mom about how my truck was wrecked. And you know, so I started seeing consequences early on in college from drinking. And you know, but again, I never thought it was as bad, because I could always compare somebody else's. You know, at least it's not as bad as this guy. And ironically, my uncle Alan, was the one that I compared to when I was growing up as an alcoholic. And we actually had a guy in a fraternity that was the worst one that I was comparing myself to, and his name was Al. I mean, I don't know. Anyway, I just saw that. Whatever. But anyway, so my name's not Al, so I can't be an alcoholic. But anyway, so yeah, that was college. And just to kind of rewind a little bit, I went to, middle school, you know, as with a lot of people, my wife was a middle school teacher. Middle school was extremely tough for me. I got into fights all the time, and I was constantly made fun of everything. It was miserable. I hated it, and I ended up going to a private high school, leaving middle school, and I was there about 2 years, and then I decided that I hated that, and then I transferred 2 years out of that school back to the public school I was assigned to, and then in college, the same thing happened. So this will become a pattern later on in my life, too, of just running away from anything that I didn't like or any problems, not sticking with anything. So let me just change everything. The problem is the school. It's not me. The problem is my job. It's not me. The problem is the city. It's not me. So it was a lot of just running away. You know, it's not me. It's something else, something outside of myself. But, you know, looking back later after being in the program, I always, you know, I came to find that, you know, the common denominator in all this that's going on is me. And you know the program gives us some tools to work on that. So again, I wasn't doing really well in school. And after about 2 years, I ended up leaving and transferring back to the school in my hometown. So I mean, it's just that crazy thinking to me. It's like, okay, I hate where I'm from. Okay, let me go here for school. Okay, let me transfer back to where I'm from. I mean, I'm just an idiot, but whatever. So anyway, I transferred back there and finished up school, and ended up finding a full-time job while I was doing that. So I was going to school at night and then working full-time for this startup cable company. And that didn't help my drinking whatsoever. You know, I noticed that it was getting bad at the Grange colleges I went to, so I went back home. And, you know, I was managing there, but I was working during the day with some people that were a lot older than me, and they were heavy drinkers as well. So, you know, we would end up drinking at lunch. We would sometimes set up some systems at some bars, and I would be there, and they'd give us free drinks to, you know, hook up extra cable outlets or something, and we ended up doing that. So, it didn't help my drinking. I mean, I was hanging out with people that were 10 years older than me, and I was the youngest one, and I was trying to fit in with them. You know, I was always just trying to fit in and improve them, you know, and impress them all. So I was doing that. I did a pretty good job. You know, I was hanging with them, and everything was going fine, and I barely graduated from college. I was just going at night, and then ended up finally graduating. And towards the end, I ended up moving over to the corporate office in West Point. Now, that's where I stayed for the next few years. And basically, I met my wife when I got out of college. We actually met in college. We were really good friends. But I was coming up to Atlanta for something, and I just said, "Hey, do you want to get together?" And we got together, and you know, just kind of hit it off again and started dating. And shortly after that, I had this job for like 8 years and doing really well. I just up and quit and moved up here and, you know, moved in with her and got a job in Atlanta. You know, it's just like, you know, yeah, everything's great. And, you know, this is making me feel good. I'm happy now. This will make everything good. So, yeah, I just up and quit my job in like no time. Got a job up here, moved in with her. And it was not unicorns and, yeah, and sugar and all that and candy. It was, we were, we, we were drinking buddies in college, and we were drinking buddies when we moved together up here. And there were some crazy fights. I mean, it was not good at all. But we did love each other a lot, and we ended up getting married shortly afterwards, like a year later. But there were lots and lots of fights, and we were in a really crazy neighborhood where there was basically a party every night. So we'd be up drinking until midnight every night, just about. And so it was the combination of the two of us drinking, the two of us fighting, and we were both miserable. She had a long, long commute to work, and I was working in Buckhead at the time later on, and neither one of us wanted to come home or anything. You know, it's like I was at the Lindbergh area, and there was that Taco Mac right outside, and I'd stay there as long as I could because I didn't want to go home. You know, it was just like, you know, it's when I get home, I'm just going to get yelled at, something's going to happen, and it's just going to be crazy. And I ended up just, you know, drinking until I, you know, as long as I could, and walk over to Marta. And my excuse was, is like, you know, hey, I'm taking Marta. I'm not drinking and driving. Everything's cool. But Marta, oh my God. So I don't know how many times I got on Marta to go home. Okay, so I'm being responsible. I'm taking the train home, and I'm not drinking and driving. But I could not make it more than two train stops without getting off the train station, walking up to the platform, throwing up over the platform, and getting back on the train, and then making it home. It would take, what would be like a 30-minute train ride, it was like an hour and a half. But I was playing it safe. I didn't plan any of this story. It's just coming to me as I go. But I'm just thinking back about the Marta thing. Oh my God. If somebody saw me doing that. But anyway, that was pretty much the thing. And all of us at work, that water finds its level. I found all the people I worked with that were drinking like me. And I remember when that Taco Mac opened, we were trying to see who could get their name on the wall first for doing 100 unique beers. And I think I was the second one on the wall. My name's still there. So if you go to Taco Mac on Lindbergh, my name is still on the wall for whatever it was. But anyway, like I said, we had the neighbor that drank a lot. We drank a lot, and it was a daily thing. And when my wife got home, she drank. Her thing was wine, and it was just nothing but fights and drinking and working. And that was kind of our life. But like I said, we did love each other, but it was just like we were just both crazy. And her mom, bless her heart, from the South, bless her heart. She was sitting on the sideline, just, she's actually in the program. She's got something like 40 years sober. She got sober like in the 70s when my wife was born. And, she never said anything, like, y'all need to quit drinking, and she just set the example of, this is how you live, this is how you live happily without drinking. And we'd go over to her house, and if we wanted to drink, it would be fine. And, she was just there. And, if we needed to talk to her, she was there. And she just showed how to live sober. And, that's going to come up later in my story when I want to get sober. But, she was just watching as a spectator, just like, I'm sure she was just shaking her head, just waiting for the 12-step opportunity to come up. But, I remember one night, though, we did go out for a dinner. And I'd been drinking at the pub over in East Point. We lived in East Point at the time, and I don't know how many shots I had of whatever it was, and I walked home from there, and she wanted to go out for dinner, so we went out for the sushi restaurant over on Ponce, and we drank there, of course. And as we were leaving, I was driving, and we pulled out over where Ponce and Boulevard cross, and this car cut in front of me, and I hit him, and then we pulled over, and I didn't, as far as my twisted view of the world, I didn't think I was drunk. I drink way more than that usually. I didn't think, I thought everything was fine. I was level headed. So, and then this lady clearly was a hit and run, because she pulled in front of me and kept going. So, like an idiot, I was going to say something else. I called the police to say, hey, there's a hit and run. I need you to come check it out. She left the scene. The police showed up, and first thing he says, have you been drinking? I'm like, yeah, we just had a couple at the sushi restaurant. And, that's kind of our normal, it's just a couple. But, a couple in the last hour. But anyway, I was like, yeah, I just had a couple over at the restaurant. And, you know, he did start doing the field sobriety test on me, and then immediately says, yeah, I'm arresting you for a DUI and brought me to jail. And then my wife had to find some way home in a taxi. And, you know, it's just, you know, all this just not thinking about other people's safety, not thinking about other people's feelings, you know, coming home late all the time, you know, just putting people's lives at risk with drinking and driving. I don't know how many times I was drinking and driving and just never got caught. I mean, this was a normal occurrence to me. You know, drinking and driving, or drinking and then driving, you know, that was just normal. I mean, you know, everybody I knew did it. And even, I mean, a lot of my friends that I had at the time, they all had DUIs, and it was just like, you know, basically it was, John, when's your turn? You know, apparently it's my turn now. You know, it was just like not a big deal, but the people I was hanging around with, they all had them, and it was just like, don't worry about it. You know, when she finally got me out of jail, and the next day, you know, of course, the first thing I wanted was a drink, and then we went over to Drunk Tracy's house, and she had obviously had a DUI lawyer on call and said, hey, call this person. And, you know, it was just, you know, he, you know, kind of got the ball rolling. And immediately our thoughts were that not I need to stop drinking, not that, you know, we need to stop arguing, not anything else. The first thought was, is Atlanta sucks, we need to move to Florida. So it wasn't just a few months later that we ended up moving to Florida. I finagled something with my boss where I could move to the office down in Tampa, and we found a place down there and moved to Florida. And we're thinking, yeah, this is going to make everything better. You know, we're going to be living on this canal and right outside of Tampa. We're going to go kayaking. We're going to live the Jimmy Buffett life. We're going to, you know, drink great, you know, drink like normal people, just sitting on the dock drinking and sitting in the hammock. And we're not going to have all the stress of Atlanta and all this stuff that's happened is bad, and all these fights are going to go away, and Florida's going to be perfect. And we got down there, and it wasn't. And I found out later that there's apparently like an AA club on every block in Florida, because I think everybody thinks that. They, you know, pretty much everybody getting all these AA groups were either from like Michigan, Ohio, New York, New Jersey. None of them were from Florida. So I think everybody says, my life sucks, I drink too much, let's move to Florida, that'll fix everything. So we were one of those groups. So we moved down there, and at that time I was able to work from home because the people in that office didn't do what I did, so I just go in like one day a week. And it quickly turned into waiting till Meg went to work to go teach. As soon as she left the house, the beer came out, the wine came out, whatever I had, and just stay sober enough to make it through my conference calls, get my work done, and then hopefully be sober enough when she comes home she doesn't realize I've been drinking all day. It was this crazy balancing act of, you know, just playing the chemist of, you know, basically just being stuck inside the house, waking up, okay, she left, okay, then bring out the beer, and then just constantly pulling it back until and staying just sober enough to do meetings, just sober enough to get my work done. And then when she gets home, you know, yeah, we can drink together, and I'll, you know, we'll go sit on the dock and talk, but, you know, as if I haven't been drinking all day. And that's pretty much my life then. You know, we lived in this awesome neighborhood right on the water, and, you know, I was pretty much a hermit in there, drinking all day. And we did do some nice things while we were down there, but it got worse. It didn't get better. Because, you know, that's what we say, you know, it does get worse, worse and worse, and we do find, you know, we do eventually find our bottom if we are a true alcoholic. So it got to the point where when I did go into work, since I drank all day, when I did go in on, like, Fridays, I couldn't make it home without having, like, stopping by a Quickie Mart and getting, like, one of the tall drinks, and then just, you know, having to drink that on the way home to make it home and then continue drinking there. You know, I just was like watching the clock saying, when can I start again? And I realized this wasn't normal after a while. And it, you know, I was just so miserable, and ended up, one day I just called my mother-in-law out of the blue, and I was just like, hey, you know, I can't do this anymore. You know, what do I do? And, you know, I know what AA is, but I don't know anything about it. You know, how to join, what to do. And she just said, you know, look it up, you know, see if you can find a meeting close by at lunch or something, and, hop in there. And, you know, it just kind of gave me the lay of the land. And I did just that. You know, I went to this meeting that was really close to my office in Tampa. And it was the 33 Club, actually, yeah. It was maybe two blocks from work, and they had a noon meeting, and I popped in there. And that was my first exposure to AA, and the first time I, you know, at least dipped my toe into, like, that I might have a problem, water. And I went in there, and honestly, I hated it. There was this one guy that must have been 85, 90 years old, and every other word out of his mouth was God this, God that, and everybody else was basically the same age, and they just, I'm not going to get sober with these people, and, this isn't going to work. And I didn't meet one guy there, and I got his number, and he seemed a little closer to my age. Yeah, he was only like 20 years older than I was. And I don't know, it's just like, I raised my hand, got a white chip, and it was the first step of saying, hey, I might have a problem. And, they say a little bit of AA will just really wreck you, I saw the steps, and I got some numbers, and I at least said, I might be an alcoholic, but, I didn't want this solution at the time. And I'd never been to treatment or anything like that. And I called her and told her I went to a meeting and it sucks and all that. How do you do this for 40 years and not kill yourself? And she's like, just give it another shot, try somewhere else. When she visits, she goes to this other group, maybe check that out. I said, okay, maybe I'll give it another chance. And then I went home from work, and wife and I promptly went to the place over nearby that had the 50-cent beers at night. Because it was that night. We always find some kind of special or reason to drink. But at least I had that in my mind. And I continued drinking like I did, but I had that in the back of my head that, I might need to do something about this. But it still was a daily thing. But I hadn't gotten any trouble because I had this DUI looming over me, still in Florida. Since we moved so quickly, I still got to keep my driver's license because it didn't flag in the system down there. But I knew I had to be extremely careful because technically I didn't have a driver's license, but if they would have looked it up, but I guess I slipped through the cracks and got one in Florida because, again, I don't think it just showed up yet. So I didn't get in trouble in Florida. It was probably a month or two after that meeting. Oh, actually, I do remember something that did happen. I did get in trouble, actually. I got this part-time job when I was there, kind of doing this energy drink marketing thing on the side. And I was supposed to show up at this park to do, it was like our first day to do this, event. And I didn't even show up because I was drinking the night before. And then I got all angry that they didn't want me around anymore. And I was like, who do you think you're talking to? And all this stuff. And they're like, yeah, you didn't show up for your first day, so we don't need you. So, that happened. So that was kind of a blow to the ego there. But obviously it didn't stop my drinking, even though I was asked to leave a job before that even started. But I remember once my wife, she went up here to go see her mom and came back. And before she came back, she got into a really big fight with a neighbor and just had a breakdown in front of her mom that she needs to stop drinking and it's just causing her all kind of problems. And she was calling me the whole way home crying. It's like, I think I might be an alcoholic. And I was talking to my mom and all this is going on. And I got all angry with David next door and I drank a whole bottle of wine and I couldn't stop. And she's like, I want to go to a meeting when I get back. And she's like, I hope that's okay. And I'm like, actually I went to a meeting a while ago. So I never told her. I just figured I'd try it out and it just didn't work. And it's like, yeah, I'll go with you. Actually I went to one a couple months ago and it was in Tampa and it didn't really work out, but I'll go with you. So I'd been drinking that whole day. And actually, a funny story about that is my dad and mom came down. They weren't aware of how heavy I've been drinking because they were all still in Columbus, and I kind of hid it very well. I kind of behaved when I was near them, as much as I could. If it was just like one day, I could usually hold it on, but if it was two, that was usually pretty rough. But they came down, And I remember my dad brought me some Sweetwater 420, which he couldn't get in Tampa at the time. They didn't sell it there. So I was like, hey, can you bring some down when you come over? And he brought it down, and I put it in the fridge. And I'm like, I'm not touching that because you can't get it down here. I'll just save it from when I want it. And when Meg went out of town, I drank that whole case while she was gone. So I was kind of ticked off myself for, like, you know, drinking all the special beer while she was gone. So I was like, yeah, that's probably a problem. If, you know, this stuff that I was trying to save for, like, a special occasion that you can't get, I drink it all in one shot. So I was like, yeah, I'll go with you tomorrow because, I've been there before, and, you know, I'll go there to support you, and we'll see, you know, maybe this one's better than the last one I went to. So we went to the one that her mom went to and recommended. It was right around the corner from our house. I didn't even know it existed. It was called the Dry Dock Center, which sounds like they repair boats. And people actually called the clubhouse asking for boat repair or boat docking quite a bit. But it was actually an AA clubhouse. And we actually went there, and, they asked, if there's anybody's first time here, and we raised our hands. Oh, crap, I got to get sober. Okay, I'm getting sober right now. Okay, so yeah, so we went to this meeting, and it was actually totally different from where I originally went to. It was a lot of younger people. There were men, there were women. It was straight, gay. It was young, old, a bunch of old Harley bikers. It was just a huge cross-section of society. You know, just like the book says, you know, that we're represented by everybody. And, you know, it felt really good. You know, it was fun. People were laughing. And, you know, I was like, I can get with this, you know. And I met a few people there, and they talked about sponsorship and gave us phone numbers. And I went home, and after the meeting, I think it was an 8 o'clock meeting, and I didn't know how I'd make it through the night without drinking. And I called this old guy, Lou, on the phone, in the phone list that they gave us. And I was like, how do I make it through till tomorrow? And he's like, you know, the basics today are just, you know, just drink some horseshoes, eat some chocolate, you know, and just call me, you know, call me if you need to and come tomorrow. And I did what he said. You know, I just went and found some horseshoes. I got some candy, and, you know, it helped a little bit, and I made it the next day. And I was like, you know, okay, well, that's stupid and simple, but it works, you know. And it got me to the next day. And I went to Lou, and I'm like, what do I do next? I can't just keep eating chocolate and orange juice. And he's like, okay, get a sponsor. So I was like, okay, well, the first thing worked, so let me do the second thing. So I got a sponsor, and it was this this guy, John, that I kind of latched on to, that we kind of hit it off. And it's kind of funny because John couldn't drive and could barely walk, so he couldn't really make it to the meeting without help. So I ended up being his meeting shuttle. So I was kind of forced to go to meetings. So it's like he'd call me up and it's like, hey, come pick me up to go to the meeting. So I have to drive all the way up to Pasco County, pick him up and bring him back to the meeting. And then after the meeting, ride home with him, and we'd talk the whole way up there and back, you know. So he kind of tricked me into, you know, extra sponsorship every day. So, we really hit it off, and we worked through the steps as quick as we could. He'd come over to our house, and, you know, we did all the writing, and I shared everything with him, and I was really embarrassed about some of the things I've done before. I obviously couldn't get to everything. And, he shared with me some of the things that he's done, and I was like, okay, you're a real alcoholic. So, I didn't doubt that I was a real alcoholic, but some of the things that he's done were just like, oh my God. So at least it made me, you know, share everything that I had. You know, that's the power of one alcoholic talking to another. It's like, you know, we can let it all out to each other, and, we get each other. And he was able to share some of the things that he's done. I was able to share some of the things that I've done and just get it out there, because all this baggage that I've had from my past, you know, that's some of the things that I drank over, some of the things that were just mulling over my head that I just couldn't get out of my head. And, we were able to work on that using the steps, things that, I was able to make amends. I was able to, pray about it, whatever needed to be done, mostly amends. And it was right about when we finished the 12th step, I lost my job. It was part of a layoff. And, we had to move back to Atlanta because, it was a layoff, and I was chosen for the layoff, but since I didn't really do a whole lot of work, it might not have actually been a layoff. I think it's just, I just got really lucky there. It's probably just looking for a reason, and you know, that was a good excuse. But I did end up making amends to my boss for that, for you know, the fact that you know I really wasn't doing as much work as I should have been. You know, in the end, I guess that is kind of stealing from the company, stealing my salary. So we did have to move back to Atlanta, and this whole time, actually, my wife and I, we had the same sobriety date, and if you ask her, she'll say she's October 4th because she didn't drink that day that I drank when she came home. So we did go to that first same meeting, we both did just pick up that one white chip. You know, that was my second one, but our sobriety date is either the same or one day difference, depending on who you ask. So we had to move back to Atlanta. And I moved back before she did because she was finishing a job teaching, and I was living in Duluth at the time, and I was started getting really active in the Easy 1-2-3 group up there, and that saved me because I was up here alone by myself, and I met a good core group of friends, and really got involved because I was here by myself, and I knew how dangerous being by myself is. So I got really involved with that group. I went every day. We went rafting, and they had a lot of good things to do. And when my wife made it up here, one of her friends from Florida actually had to move up to Atlanta from Florida on the same day that she did with her husband. So she actually knew about this Fifth Tradition group, and we ended up transferring there, you know, after her friend joined. And, you know, it was closer to the house that we ended up buying, close to here. So I've been a member there ever since, and it's been a great group, and it's where I met my sponsor, Robert, and, you know, he's been really involved in a lot of my life, and, yeah, a great friend and a great advisor, and, you know, sponsorship's huge. When I met my first sponsor, he walked me through a lot of things, and, you know, when I moved back to Georgia, the first thing he said was find a good sponsor up there. You know, I can sponsor you for a little while remotely, and, you know, I miss him like crazy. He ended up passing away shortly after I moved to Atlanta. I was actually out of town when he passed, so I didn't make it to his funeral for work. But, yeah, he was a great guy. And then, you know, sponsors just immensely valuable in this program because, they, you know, they've walked this path before. And, you know, as I'm walking it, you know, I always need to talk to people who have, you know, done it before. You know, and group members too, you know, just talking to people in the group when I'm going through something. I've been going through some problems with my family, and I've been talking to people who have been there, you know, they're in my home group. They've gone through things that I've gone through. And, you know, it's crazy. You know, life is awesome right now. You know, I went from just, my wife and I, you know, fighting all the time to being just, like, super tight. Well, I can't recall the last real fight we've had. We've had some bickers and some name-calling, but, you know, it's rare. But, you know, just, you know, it's no more than anybody else. But, it's an awesome relationship now since we both stopped drinking and, you know, worked the program. Because we can work it together. You know, we can call each other out on our crap. And, you know, we can speak the same language. So it's really amazing having both of us in the program. And, you know, it's... you know, I've had it. You know, I was basically a loner with a DUI, and you know, barely holding on to a job. To now, you know, I'm doing, you know, pretty well. And you know, we bought a house, and the state of Pennsylvania and the state of Georgia both agreed that we're fit to raise a child and adopt a child, which is crazy. You know, so we adopted our first son this year, or last year actually, and we never thought we wanted kids. And you know, the program and the people we met here, and you know, just not thinking about ourselves so much anymore, have kind of changed our mind of, you know, we want to raise a child. And unfortunately, you know, just the way things happen, adoption is a route we went. But it fortunately actually is, you know, we found an amazing son now. I mean, he's like, you know, we couldn't have asked for anybody better. It's just awesome. But you know, AA's taught us to be just a full open book, you know, from doing amends and to, you know, doing inventory. You know, I'm not afraid of, you know, airing out my dirty laundry. You know, when you're going through adoption, you have to give up everything. You know, all your tax returns. They do fingerprint checks. They do criminal background checks. They do everything. I mean, you know, she was like amazed, like, you know, oh, you just, you had a DUI, and you explained it and just move on. You didn't try to cover it up. I'm like, well, why? You know, that's my life, or you know, all this stuff, and you know, tax returns here. Take it. You know. And, you know, it's the program, you know, it's just taught us just to be honest and just move on and do the next right thing. And then, you know, we got an amazing son for that. And as Robert said, this year, my dad passed away from ALS, and it's been a tough battle the last, like, 5 years. It's a hell of a disease, but it's not been easy. But, you know, working with this program, you know, it's taught me to, you know, how to handle that. You know, I was able to be helpful. I wasn't around for my granddad's funeral and when he passed. And I was around for my dad and my mom, you know, helping them out. And, you know, it's the tools of the program, you know, just being helpful and, you know, just doing the next right thing. And, you know, mother-in-law's ended up moving down the street from us, and, you know, we're able to help her out. She's able to help us out. And, you know, that's what the program's taught us, you know, just helping each other out and, you know, just, you know, being helpful to our fellow person. And, you know, the payoff is huge. You know, I'm definitely a lot happier now. And, you know, met some great people. I used to travel the world for my last job, and I met people all over the world in AA that I still were friends with. And, you know, it's just a crazy network, you know. I think I'm running out of time here, but I remember it was crazy. I was in China with a coworker. We were working over there, and like our third day there, I'm like, I got to go. You know, and it was like 8 o'clock or something. I got to go. I can't hang out tonight. I got to go see some friends. He's like, what? How do you have friends in Beijing? And I was like, just trust me. I got to go for a couple hours. So I went to a meeting. And then, like, the next week while we're there, we're touring we're over around the, not the Great Wall, but the Tiananmen Square area. And I called up my friend from one of the meetings and was like, hey, we're over here. What should we do next? And he was like, tour guiding us all over the city. And he was like, just amazed that I had like this network already. And I was only been there for a few days. So, yeah, I mean, it's just it's a wide open world now. I mean, we have this connection that, you know, normal people just don't understand. You know, no matter where I go, I've got somebody that knows how I feel, even if we speak different languages or, you know, even if we're on, you know, different cultures, that, you know, they know exactly how I feel. And, you know, that's how it was in the beginning, you know, with, you know, when I first started talking to my sponsor, you know, he immediately got me and I got him. We know how each other feel, you know, that not belonging, feeling different then, and just, you know, wanting to escape. And, you know, everybody I talked to in the program has felt that same way. And, you know, it just feels like I'm home now. And, you know, I don't want any other way. So I guess that's it. Thanks.
Congratulations, Papa John. All right. Living the promises. Okay. Tinsley's back. Let's go hand out the chips.
Hey, everybody. I'm Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for that story. That's great. I know how it is to travel and have friends everywhere. It's amazing. That's what I was looking for in drinking, really, is to have friends everywhere. Here at this meeting, we have a chip system to mark our time away from our last drink. If you'd like to try this way of life one day at a time, we offer a white chip. Anybody like to pick up a white chip? After 30 days, we have a silver chip. A gold chip for 60 days. Anybody got 90 days for red chip? How about 6 months for yellow chip? About 9 months for green chip? Any birthdays? 1 year or multiples? All right.
Thank you, Tinsley, and thank you, John. Hey, everybody, I'm Mike. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic.
Hey, Mike.
This is 29. Yeah. 29 years ago, right about now, I discovered that I couldn't get drunk anymore and I couldn't stay sober. I could not drink, and when I drank, I just couldn't, it just stopped working. And for a long, long time, alcohol was my solution. And when your solution stops working, you're in a heap of a mess. And a couple of days later, I made it to my first AA meeting, and the rest is kind of history. I haven't had to pick up white chip since. Grace of God and the power of this program. And I was also a member of the Lillehammer Group of Alcoholics Anonymous 26 years ago, which for about 9 months. So I know, I didn't understand the language, but I understood. And that's pretty powerful stuff. I do want to share one thing with you. In 23 days, so this is 29 for me, in 23 days, my wife's self picks up 30. So it's 30 years, okay? Now, if you do that math, that's Christmas Day. And let me just suggest to you that it doesn't matter whether she's got one day more than you or 342 days more than you. She's got more time than you, and don't you ever forget that. The proper response is always, yes, dear. I love this time of year. I'll tell you, I thoroughly enjoyed Thanksgiving Day. Which I spent most of blowing leaves and mowing leaves, but I still just enjoyed the day. Because, you know, the Thanksgiving 29 years ago really sucked. Really, really sucked. And, you know, the holidays after were really kind of special for me. And a few days after I discovered that it stopped working, I checked myself into Petrie Hospital. A couple weeks after that, they wouldn't let me out. A couple weeks after that, they wouldn't let me out of the hospital to go to my daughter's second birthday. They told me that the best thing that I could do for that little girl was to give her a sober dad. And so I did. And now I'm a sober grandfather. And Benji is 6 months old, and he is awesome. I'm just going to tell you, he's awesome. I'll show you the pictures after the meeting if you want to see them. I always have a special place in my heart for folks trying to get sober this time of the year. This is tough on a lot of alcoholics, you know. A lot of people have trouble dealing with the holidays, sober or drunk. And for an alcoholic to go through the holidays, that can be very difficult. It doesn't have to be, but it can be. But to me, I always have a special place in my heart. And Sylvia, I want to give you this birthday chip, and you hold on to this, and if you have anything comes up during the holidays, just remember that somebody can stay sober one day at a time, 29 years, one day.
Any other birthdays? Anybody want to reconsider on a white chip? Big hand for the chips you hold.
Thank you, T. Great job. Thank you, one and all, for joining the Blue Chip Speakers Meeting tonight.
I won't have to fight it no more. somehow, some way, I'll win my fight someday, and we'll all be together on that broad highway. And we'll all be together on that broad highway. And we'll all be together on that broad highway.